Hi folks, it's your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks. Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm your host, Harmit, and today we'll be talking with a U of M professor about his research into the soil health of British Columbia. Let's get started. Here's Francis Jamoya.
To start off, can you give me an overview of your goals and objectives for your current research project, on soil productivity and healthy and restored pipeline corridors?
Okay, so this is a project that was initiated by the province of British Columbia and industry, because you probably know that British Columbia, they are the second largest producer of natural gas in Canada after after Alberta. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of energy activity. They have a little bit of oil, but most of the their energy production is natural gas. So it's concentrated in the northeastern part of the province, mm-hmm. close to the border with Alberta. So it so happens that in that part of the province also, that's where they have most of their agricultural land. So their prime agricultural land for, normal crop production, that's where it's concentrated, and they have a lot of animal production there, mm-hmm. as well. So British Columbia is known for being mountainous because of the Rocky Mountains and mm-hmm. so forth. So the northeast part is the prairie part of this. It's very similar to the prairie provinces. So they have what they call the agricultural land reserve in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And so that's, some of their most agricultural productive are land. And so the primary and the priority land use are for that is agriculture. So everything else comes secondary. Mm-hmm. So now it so happens that, that same region where you have a lot of agricultural production taking place, that's where also the natural gas production is taking place. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of a lot of production of oil there. So it's coexisting with agriculture. And so the province, they have what they call the Agricultural Land Commission. They oversee the use of that agricultural land reserve. Okay. So energy activities are allowed, but, with the understanding that they are temporary activities. Mm. So long-term, but temporary. But it's so long-term that, production of natural gas in northeastern British Columbia started in the 1950s, so it's been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. So now that coexistence, sometimes you have issues, right? Because you have all these natural gas wells, all that production taking place. They have to transport the natural gas, right? So mostly they use pipelines. So those pipelines are buried below ground. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, because you have most of the land is cropland, right? Or pasture land or forested land. So you have a lot of the pipelines, they pass through fields. So where you have crops. So, although they are buried, so after they dig the trench to bury the pipelines, they have to restore that section of the field which is damaged, so that mm-hmm. it's as productive as it was originally. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a process referred to as reclamation. So what they do when they are digging the trench to bury the pipeline, they store the topsoil separately from the subsoil, because your topsoil, that's the more fertile soil, that's where your plants are getting the nutrients. Mm-hmm. So that when they are doing the reclamation, they put back the less productive subsoil to the subsurface where it came from, and then they put the topsoil on top of that. After that, they compensate, so they negotiate these compensation packages with the farmers for loss of productivity and loss of revenue. Mm-hmm. So they pay them on average, I believe it's up to 3 years. So they are saying that, okay, you are going to incur yield losses for a period of 3 years. So the problem is that farmers have been complaining that, okay, we are being paid by industry for up to 3 years of crop loss, but we are experiencing losses way beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but industry are saying that, well, we did the land reclamation and the regulators, they came, they did assessments, and yeah, it passed and we got reclamation certificates saying that we completed the process successfully. So, well, I guess the challenge is that when regulators do those assessments after reclamation or restoration, what they look at is that they count the plants, right?
Okay.
Number of plants there for your crop, and also they measure the plant heights. In many cases, they are very closely correlated, like, you know, with the yields at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come earlier in the season before the crop matures, you measure those heights and the height looks good,
mm-hmm.
and you have a good stand, which means that the number of plants per unit area
mm-hmm.
are good, then usually that translates to yield. But
okay.
it doesn't happen always, because sometimes you can have a very tall plant,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, not producing anything or producing very little. So the farmers, that's what they've been complaining about. And so that's why, like, you know, the province of British Columbia, they decided, oh, maybe we should do a research and take a closer look at exactly what's happening. You know, what the farmers are saying, can it be substantiated? So that's where this came from. And so I applied for funding from the British Columbia Oil and Gas Research
mm-hmm.
and Innovation Society.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an independent organization. So,
mm-hmm.
but they are related to the, you know, obviously their focus is on natural gas and oil. So we got funding there. And using that, we leveraged funds from the federal government. So we got some funds from my tax program
mm-hmm.
to support that research as well. Basically, that's the background. That's where this came from, for us to try and ground truth. Like, you know, so the reclamation that's being done, you know, is it, are there issues associated with that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're interested in looking at not just the 3 years over which the farmers are compensated, but we're also going to look at, you know, some pipelines that have been in place for a longer period.
Mm-hmm.
So we selected pipelines that were from 3 to 4 years after they completed the reclamation, that's putting the place back to a condition like where, you know, what existed before the disturbance. So 3 years after, so by that time, it was expected that, like, you know, you should have full production from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also looked at some older pipelines that were 12, 13 years old. So
mm-hmm.
in other words, 13 years after they completed the installation and also the restoration of the disturbed sites within the field. And so, but it's referred to as a chrono sequence. So instead of us starting, like, you know, from day one, we establish an experiment, well, that would take us 13 years before we get. So we took advantage of the fact that we have pipelines of different ages within
mm-hmm.
Within that region.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at, you know, instead of just looking at the plant heights and plant counts, we wanted to focus on what the farmers are complaining about,
mm-hmm.
which is the yield. So we did some yield assessments. So this work started in 2019 in the fall.
Okay.
So that's just before the pandemic. So we had some issues during the pandemic, like, you know, restrictions, you know, travel restrictions, because
mm-hmm.
it's very far, and also going there, you know, interacting with the farmers and others doing our work. So, but nonetheless, we are able to do quite a bit. So initially, it was supposed to be a 2 year project,
mm-hmm.
but then, you know, we talked with the funding organization, you know, and they understood that the pandemic presented challenges. So we asked for additional time. So in the end, we got another 2 years. So
mm-hmm.
so I've been doing that project for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 4 years through the end of last year. But, you know, we have extended it again to
mm-hmm.
March with the hope that we'll probably get some additional funding to continue, look at other aspects and also look at more sites, you know, pipelines, you know, additional edges of the pipelines, take some measurements which we didn't take last time. So that's the plan. So that's the background. That's where all this, you know, came from. So you have industry involved, you have the regulators involved, then you have the farmers are involved. So like they have to coexist, like both agriculture and, you know, the energy sector, they are very, very important for the economy of the province. But at the same time, like, you know, when you do production, you want to make sure that you are not negatively impacting the other sector. So where there are issues, you know, there are some mechanisms in place where they can, like, you know, arbitration, or they can, you know, negotiate, discuss, and so forth. So this is part of that. Like, you know, the landowners are complaining. So the regulators, they want to get to the bottom of the problem to see, you know, the extent of the problem, the extent of the losses in the yields and revenue that the farmers are encountering. But also from us as scientists, they want to know what we recommend. Can something be done, you know, to try and mitigate those problems, at least minimize them? So that's what we are looking at. We are measuring not just the crop yields and crop quality, and they have a lot of different crops that they grow in rotations there. But also want to get to the bottom of that, because the yields, they depend not just on rainfall, but the soil, the quality of the soil, how fertile is it? So when we damage it, because it's a living thing, right? So after you damage it, it takes, just like us humans, it will take time for the soil to and the land to heal after that damage. So want to see how long does it take to heal? And there are a lot of different, like, you know, measures of the health of the soil. You know, with people, you look at the blood pressure, you look at the heart rate and so forth. So there are similar things also for the soil. One, to look at the life within the soil, like the microbial populations, because those are very important for nutrient cycling. One, to see, like, you know, what are the impacts of pipeline installation, and how long is it taking for those microbial populations, which are so critical, how long does it take for them to recover fully, or at least to approach the levels that we are measuring in parts of the field that were not impacted by the pipeline construction? And we are also looking at the, you know, nutrients, like nutrient takeover, turnover. We're looking at that. We are looking at soil physical processes, because you apply fertilizers or you get precipitation, you get rainfall, you want to make sure that it's moving fast enough, like, you know, to the roots so it can be taken up by the plants. We want to make sure that the soil is not too compacted, because during the process of installing those pipelines, like, you know, they use heavy equipment, heavy vehicles, and so those, they compact the soil, it becomes very dense. So sometimes that might present some challenges, restrictions to root development, root growth. You know, you want your roots to be able to grow deeper, where they can extract the nutrients, the fertilizers, and also extract the moisture. So we are taking measurements, you know, of those physical properties. How bad is the compaction? You know, what can be done in order to mitigate that? And also, how fast or how slowly is it recovering with time? Because, you know, as farmers do their operations, you know, sometimes some light cultivation that they use to try and mitigate that. And we are also measuring, like, you know, so when we get snow, because farmers, they rely so much on the snow cover, right? So when the snow melts, how fast is it going down into the soil? Because you can see right now, like, you know, in Winnipeg, we have the snow that we had is disappearing, it's melting. Sometimes you see on the land, there's ponding, But if you have enough slop, it's just going to run off into the ditches and then it goes to the rivers, to the lakes, right? But for farmers, they don't want to lose that moisture. What they want to happen is that the snow is melting. They want it to go into the ground, right? Because it gets stored there so that the crops can utilize that moisture.
Mm-hmm.
The same also with the rainfall. When you get rainfall, you want it to go into the soil where it can be used by the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the same time, you know, even if you are not going to lose it through runoff, you don't want it to pond at the surface, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when that happens, you know, you are suffocating the plant roots because you can't get oxygen moving into the soil. And also early in the season, when you get the snow melt and your moisture is not moving into the soil, just you get saturated conditions near the surface, it's very difficult for them to go with their equipment to do the cultivation, the seeding, and so forth. So all those factors are very important. They affect, you know, plant growth, you know, your yields ultimately. So we are looking at all those. And also some impacts, because you have the presence of a pipeline. Some of the pipelines have been there for a very, very long time, for decades. So we also look at the physical impacts of those pipelines. For example, some of the things that we haven't looked at is the temperature, for example, because like you have gas which is being transported under pressure. So like the higher the pressure, the warmer the pipeline is going to be. So it's going to be, you know, there's a chance that it will warm the overlying soil cover. And when that happens, like in that region, they don't get a lot of rainfall. So you want to keep whatever moisture you get, you want to keep it within the soil. But when the temperature is raised, so you're going to get a lot of evaporation. So that moisture, you are losing it. It's going to the air, right? So the plants are not going to be able to access it. So those are some of the things that we are looking at.
Mm-hmm.
The microbial population, we want to see what they call the diversity. So there are many different types of microorganisms, and each group, each species, it performs a different function, which is very important for the soil ecosystem and also for agricultural productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking at those, like, you know, for example, different types of bacteria, different types of fungi,
mm-hmm.
and we want to see, like, you know, over the pipeline, how do those populations compare to further away from the pipeline, where the land, the field was not disturbed. So we are looking at all those, because the more species you have, like, you know, and also the larger the numbers of the microorganisms that you have in the soil, the better the soil. So it means that the soil is healthy and it's in a better position to perform its functions, which include crop production. So those are some of the things that we have been looking at for, you know, over the last 4 years. And we have shared, you know, preliminary results, you know, with the province, and, you know, provided our recommendations, and they do understand that, well, it's a big problem and you can't solve it in, you know, within a couple of years. And so it looks like they are willing to, you know, see if we can take it, like, you know, maybe for another 2 to 3 years, continue that research. So, so we'll see. We have submitted an application. We're just waiting for the results to see, like, you know, how far we can go with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really, really cool. And could you tell me about some of the preliminary results and recommendations that you shared with the province?
So, you know, not a lot of surprises, like the farmers, you know, like the farmers were saying, you know, they are seeing, you know, reduced yields, and therefore, like, you know, reduced revenue from their land. So that's not a surprise,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, and also some of the soil properties, what we are finding is that, like, you know, some are not recovering as fast as they, you know, as fast as we would hope.
Mm-hmm.
So things are a little slow. But on the positive side, you know, we see that there's progress, like, you know, for some of the soil, critical soil quality indicators. We are seeing that, like, you know, after 10, 12 years, you know, they are improving in some cases. They are just as good as, undisturbed parts of the field. So yes, things are happening there, but it looks like they are not ha happening as fast as would hope. So farmers are saying, well, we are not being compensated fast enough, and these are preliminary results, and it could be that that's the case, that's what's happening. So yeah, so there are no surprises, and there have been some studies that are being done in the US as well. So it's they are observing the same thing as well. I think in parts of the US the pipeline companies, they compensate farmers for 5 years. Yes, yeah. So although they are compensated for 3 years, and they have to negotiate because the regulators, they don't set the compensation level. The farmers have to negotiate that with the pipeline operators or companies. So it's the same in the US also. So, typically, farmers there south of the border, they are compensated over a 4 year period. So on a sliding scale. So in the first year after installation of the pipeline and reclamation or the disturbed right of ways, they get 100% compensation. So they are saying, okay, we expect that you won't harvest much really from your field because of the disturbance. In the second year, so they are saying, okay, we expect some recovery. So instead of compensating you 100%, we assume that you are going to lose 25% of your yield. So they get 75% compensation, and then in the third year, 50%. In the fourth year, they get 25%. Then after 5 years, they don't get anything. So the assumption is that the land has recovered. So and it could be that it works in some regions, in some areas. So because if the problem is that you are losing a lot of moisture because elevated temperatures, which we haven't measured, we still have to look at that. But it's just a fact. It happens. So if that's the case, but you are in a region where you get a lot of precipitation, a lot of rainfall, then that drying that you observe, in the drier parts of the prairies or in that part of British Columbia, it won't have as bad an impact as where you have limited moisture. So like for example, in that part, they get total precipitation really is about 4 to 420, 450 millimeters. So that's very little. And the crops are grown, mostly it's dry land, so they don't use supplemental irrigation in their crop production. So every drop of moisture that you get becomes critical. But in more humid parts of the world, that impact at least is cancelled because you have adequate moisture. So you may in fact benefit, right, from the warmer conditions early in the season, because like then you put your seed into the soil, the germination is faster and better, and the early growth of the seedlings is faster. Because on the prairies, when we go to do our seeding, the soils are still very very cold. So initially, you have your seedlings, they struggle until the temperatures are high enough. So you would hope that maybe if there's adequate moisture, then your plants will do really well because they are also getting good heat from the pipeline right of way. So yeah, so those are some of the things that we are looking at, and we hope that we'll be able to continue this time using a much larger sample size, because we did test on three farms, and so ideally you want to do way more than that. So we have proposed that we want to look at a large number of pipeline right of ways, and also look at different scenarios. We want to see, if there are pipelines that are doing better than others. Is it because of maybe the way they did their installation, or how they did the reclamation, or is it because did they construct in the winter months versus the summer months? Because it makes a difference in terms of the extent of the damage that happens, right? If your ground is frozen versus when it's not frozen, like what were the moisture conditions and things like that. So those are some of the things that we hope to look at, you know, if we do get the funding to continue the project.
No, that's really, really cool. And I think I just have one more question. What motivated you to focus on this particular area of study on soil science?
Okay, so I guess my background. So I have a very diverse background, like, you know, so I did my PhD or my master's. Well, since my bachelor's degree back in Zimbabwe, like, you know, I studied, I was focusing on agriculture, specializing in soil science. The same when I did my master's in England, I was working on soil science, and my PhD in Minnesota, which is very similar conditions to here in Manitoba. So I was also working on, I did soil science, and then I went to Alberta. That's where I first got exposed to land reclamation because of the energy industry there. So when I was working for Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada there, we did quite a bit of work on land reclamation. And we're not looking at pipelines, we're looking at, you know, land disturbances from oil and natural gas well sites. Just setting up that well site, it caused quite a bit of disturbances, physical disturbances. And so we're looking at those. And so, yes, I have interest in land reclamation. So land that has been physically disturbed, like, you know, restoring it back to a productive state. So that's one of my area of expertise. And I also do some work with contaminants, like, you know, organic contaminants, lead. We did some work here a few years ago, 2017, 2018, in the St. Boniface area there, where we're looking at lead contamination in the home gardens and backyards, front yards, in the city parks. So we did some work. It made the headlines, you know, for quite some work. So that's my area of expertise. I look at contaminants. I look at land disturbance, and I also look at you know, nutrient recovery, for example, from the food cycle, like the food that we eat, like, you know, the wastewater, it contains nutrients, right? Because we apply fertilizers to our crops, they take those up, we consume the food, we are taking in some of those nutrients, and they end up in the municipal lagoon. So we have looked at, like, you know, recovery of those nutrients, and there are some companies who are now doing that on a commercial scale, and so how can we utilize that? So all of my research, like, although I'm in an agricultural department, so a lot of my research focus on, you know, environmental impacts and how we mitigate those. It's interesting. It's important enough. It affects, like, you know, our agricultural land. At the same time, like, you know, the energy industry, energy sector, it contributes a lot to the economy. So you, as researchers, we are not trying to find problems or issues, but what we do is that we look, is there a problem? If there's a problem, we don't assign blame. What we try and do is to find ways of mitigating those problems. So we can say, okay, there's an issue here. Yes, how we think this should be addressed to minimize the problem. So that's what we do as scientists from a public institution.
You can listen to Tobin Talks anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. And you can pick up a copy of the Manitoban from stands all throughout campus. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you then.